The Island on the Edge of Forever by Andrew M. Crusoe. On the edge of the known cosmos on the other side of time. The Aravinda galaxy was born sublime, yet this sublime state was not meant to last. Chapter 1, A Halo in the Sky. Asha felt a chill sweep through her body. She was a young girl sitting amidst a glimmering landscape of technology. All around her were flickering lights and rows of equipment scattered across the large, swooping workspaces that filled the room. And above her was a large glass dome that revealed a once clear sky, now thick with ominous clouds. Asha winced. Her father hadn't mentioned a storm. She looked back down to the small metallic sphere on her lap and twisted part of it. Dozens of points on its surface flared to life as it left her hands and floated up into the air. She watched the sphere fly around in careful circles. "Do you think I have time to fix one more, Dad?" Her father walked over and put his hand on her shoulder. In the reflection of one of the machines, Asha noticed that most of the pockets on his graphite jumpsuit were strangely empty. Times really had changed. "Absolutely, Asha," he said. "We're not due at the docks until evening, so we still have time to eat, pack, and settle into our quarters. Don't you remember?" "Right." Asha leapt up and walked over to a large bin filled with dozens more of the metallic spheres. "Heh, just look at all of this," Yontrik said. Wandering over to another table covered in a bizarre assortment of wires, half-built contraptions, and tiny metallic parts. "It's too bad there wasn't more room for the entire inventory." "But Dad, didn't you say we wouldn't need this old stuff?" Asha walked back over and sat down at the workspace, running a blue beam of light over the sphere. "I thought you said we'd be able to bring everything we truly need." "Don't worry, Asha, we are. I guess your old dad has trouble letting go sometimes." Asha watched her father pick up three small dice with 12 sides each and roll them onto the table. The dice clattered onto the metal surface, all coming up as single dots, the lowest score. Yontrik laughed. "I guess it's a good thing I gave these up. Still can't roll to save my life. How's that pod coming along?" Asha turned back to the sphere she was holding, made a final twist, and snapped it back together again. "There you are," she said. "All fixed. You're all healed." Yontrik walked back over to his daughter, brushing some of his black hair behind his ears. "Just fixed, Asha. People we heal, machines we fix, okay?" They watched as the sphere rose into the air and began scanning the room with a sharp, magenta beam. Asha turned to him and studied his face. "Do you ever think I could heal someday? I know there aren't many healers left, but what if I found someone you know to teach me?" Yontrik sat down onto a chair next to her, his dark brown eyes full of compassion. "You can be whatever you desire, Asha Kirta, as long as you find the right teacher." "Thanks," she trailed off in thought, "except what if I'm not good at it? What if I'm only good with machines?" Yontrik put his hand on her shoulder. "Asha, none of us start out with great skill. Time will bring that. It's the intention that matters. Remember that." Asha embraced her father tightly. Thunder rumbled above them, and Yontrik scanned the darkening sky above the dome. Something's wrong. Climate control forecasted clear skies. Just before Asha could reply, the comm around her father's wrist whistled. He glanced down to it and darted over to one of the windows that overlooked the city. "Impossible," he whispered. "There's no way they could have gotten here this fast." Even with the Asha jumped up from her seat and ran over to the window, but before she could reach it, her father turned around and picked her up. "What is it, Dad? Why don't you want me to see?" Yontrik was reading something on the comm around his wrist, but he tilted it away from her view. "I'm sorry, little one," he said. "We have to leave now." A flicker of despair flashed behind his eyes. Still holding Asha with one arm, he grabbed a thin crimson case with his other hand. With his knuckles, he pressed some of the glowing buttons on the panel beside the door and ran out, daughter in one hand, case in the other. Asha held on tightly as her father ran down a twisting stone ramp that led to the lower levels of the tower. Soon the light of day had left the tunnel, and only the red overhead lights remained like tiny, always watching eyes along the ceiling. Asha shut her eyes and buried her face into her father's shoulder. Even though she was mature for a 7-year-old, all of this felt like a nightmare she couldn't wake up from. She heard a hissing sound and a clunk. The air felt cooler now. Part of her wanted to know where she was, but another part wanted to stay in her father's safe embrace. She didn't want to think about what was coming. They had talked about it for months now, and some of her friends even seemed excited to settle on a new planet. But the full ramifications of the plan were still unthinkable to her. She felt herself accelerate and was tempted to open her eyes again, but decided against it. After a few moments, the wind kicked up and blew her long brown hair all around her. Her father was running again. She heard the sound of an airlock, or was it an elevator? She felt a rising sensation in the pit of her stomach, breathing deeply to try and calm herself. "Look," her father whispered, "we're aboard." Gradually, Asha opened her eyes and an expansive room flooded her vision. They were moving upward in a transparent elevator. And far below was a huge cargo bay with many levels of platforms above it, all lit from below. In fact, there was no sunlight here at all, and she stared in disbelief at the huge room until they passed into a dark space. A moment later, the elevator stopped and slid open, revealing a crowded room filled with dozens of uniformed people darting to and fro. At the end of the room on the far right was a wide window with a long console below it. Beyond that was a surreal sight, roiling crimson clouds. Yontrik went over to a control panel on the far end and set Asha down on a chair next to him. "She's not supposed to be here," one of the officers barked. "Someone get her out of here. If she goes, I go." Yontrick pulled out a silver medallion from one of his zippered pockets and flashed it at the man, who deflated slightly at seeing the small disc. "Yes, sir, just don't let her touch anything." Asha looked over to her left and noticed a row of smaller hexagonal windows spaced along the wall, just above her head. A female voice echoed throughout the space. "Priority alert to all stations, liftoff sequence engaged." Asha felt a rumble beneath her feet and the clouds outside washed by. She turned to her father, who was engrossed in what he was doing at the controls, along with dozens more officers, all immersed in different tasks. "Dad, are we really leaving now, forever?" Her father remained silent, typing in commands as if his life depended on it. Ahead, Asha could see a few stars, but part of the view was obscured, as if a perfectly black, jagged shape were obstructing her view. She looked back to her father's screen and watched as the tower they'd been inside and the glittering city around it shrank into the distance. She would never again see the ruddy mountain ranges, sheer cliffs, and pristine streams that she grew up with, and a deep sadness swept over her. By now, her father had minimized the rear camera feed to a quarter of the screen. Most of the screen was taken up by navigational data and other symbols Asha didn't understand. Despite the camera feed being smaller, she could still see a few major features of the city. Once again, she tried to find the research tower they'd been in and quickly spotted it, admiring its elegant dome one last time before a piercing green beam of light shot down from the sky, slicing the tower in half. In what seemed like slow motion, one side crumbled apart, exposing dozens of rooms. Words left her as she beheld thick green beams of death crisscrossing her beloved city, setting entire districts aflame in mere seconds. Asha wept. Her father pulled himself away from the controls and took her hand. "I'm sorry, Asha, I'm sorry this had to happen." She saw that her father was filled with despair too, but why? She managed to say through the sobs, "Why are they doing this? Don't they realize what they're doing? How can they be so heartless?" Tears streamed down her face, and her father wiped some away with his sleeve. Ahead, she noticed they were approaching a colossal ring structure hanging in space. "Asha, they don't have hearts." Another announcement rang around them. "Please be advised, gate jump imminent. They don't have hearts." Asha watched as the void in space grew larger. The paths of light that were etched into the ring now glowed, appearing like a halo in the sky, and the starlight at the center of the ring twirled in a mad spin. "Exactly, and that is why we will survive." And before another thought could enter her mind, the swirling maelstrom engulfed them, and all became darkness. Asha felt a chill sweep through her once more, and her eyes flashed open. Just ahead of her was a dying fire, and Asha shivered at the sight of the flickering embers. She pulled the blanket around her tighter and pushed herself up from the bare rock, noticing that Zahn was still asleep on a pad beside the fire. His mouth hung slightly open, and he'd kicked off half of his blanket in the night. She wondered what time it was and glanced over to Zahn's backpack where she'd stowed her comm. Ruffling through it would probably wake him up, so she let the thought go, her gaze drifting up to the wealth of stars spread out above her. None of the constellations looked familiar, an ever-present reminder that she was on Avani, a world thousands of light-years from home. The memory flashed back to her. She considered how no other event had changed her life as much as that one day. Long ago, when she was a child, she had lost her home and it had forever shaped the woman she had become. But home could be rebuilt, not always literally, but the idea of home could once again find fertile ground in her heart. And while living on the outpost ring didn't stir her soul like the stunning cliffs and midnight blue seas back on Tavisi, at least they had survived. That was what mattered. Still snugly wrapped in one of Zahn's travel blankets, Asha stood up and walked to the edge of the bare rock that formed most of the peak. Tiny pebbles littered the otherwise smooth stone, so she had to be careful not to slip on them. The wind kicked up and she knelt down to keep her balance. Below, she could see the mountain drop down sharply and then level off where a thick azure forest grew on a gentle slope until it became silvery beaches that met with the ocean. To her right, she could see the curved northern coast of the island where Ashraya City glowed with uncountable pinpricks of white light, like millions of fireflies. And to her left, she thought she could make out some lights from the other islands, although tonight was too hazy to be sure. In the sky above, she noticed the colors begin to brighten and glanced back to Zahn, reflecting on their journey to the center of the galaxy that had eventually led to their battle with the Vakraga. During their adventure, anything had seemed possible. The breathtaking majesty of the galaxy had been spread out before them, she had embraced her talent as a healer, and her life had been irrevocably changed. She admired Zahn's feathery blonde hair, now messy in his slumber, and recalled what he had said to her. "When the planet shattered, I woke up in time-space and I thought I was dead. Do you know who I thought of first? I thought of you, Asha. In all of my life, I've never met anyone like you." His words had touched her, and although she didn't show it, she had felt drawn to him too. But then he asked her to stay on Avani, a decision that was more complex than he realized. She and her father had a responsibility, after all. They couldn't just up and leave the outpost ring. The marauder creatures would run rampant, swarming the innocent inhabitants of the ring and literally tearing their ships apart. And because her father was the only one in the ring that had enough firepower to counter the marauders, they had a responsibility to keep it safe. Asha considered the previous night when Zahn had brought her up here to the highest point of the archipelago. With great excitement, he'd pointed out Ashraya City and the lights from the distant islands. They got caught in each other's gaze and grew close. He had leaned in to kiss her, but she had pulled back. Her eyes studied the dying fire. She wished there was a way. Her heart longed for a way to honor both sides of herself. Buzz, buzz, buzz. Asha gasped and ran over to Zahn's backpack, frantically searching for the source of the alarm. She ruffled through it, finally finding Zahn's wristcom next to hers and silencing it. She looked over to Zahn and he let out a huge yawn. He sat up and sniffed. Good morning, Asha. Were you already awake? Yeah, she said, donning her silver wristcom. It adjusted, retracting for a snug yet comfortable fit. A dream woke me up. Hem, he rubbed his eyes. Why did you set an alarm? You didn't tell me. I didn't. Zahn blinked and looked around. Oh, I'm sorry. My dad wants to have a big breakfast this morning, so I thought we could start hiking down at sunrise. Is that okay? Asha squinted at him. But didn't your mom say she doesn't like you coming up here? That's really why you want to get down there earlier, isn't it? Zahn grumbled. Okay, sure. She thinks the trails are a little hazardous, but it's nothing compared to what we've already been through, and if we get down there before they wake up, she'll never have to know, right? He smirked at her. Right, she sighed. Fine, I don't want to cause trouble, but you should tell your parents where you're going, and you should tell me when you set an alarm. I did, I told my dad. Sorry about the alarm. Can I have my wristcom, please? We need to get moving. She handed it to him, and he looped it around his wrist. Together, they compressed the sleeping pads, packed up, and made their way down the misty trail to the silvery beach far below. Asha noticed how the sky was growing warm with the hues of the morning, following Zahn as he jogged down the narrow trail between boulders and beside sheer cliffs. It was easy to see that he had made this journey dozens of times before. Asha tried to enjoy the beauty of the morning light on the misty trail, but her thoughts kept returning to their impending conversation. She had told him that she would think about staying on Avani, but now she realized that there was only one responsible answer. Thinking about his reaction gave her an uncomfortable, tight feeling in her chest. When they reached the stone house, Zahn pressed his thumb to a pad beside the door and opened it, revealing a front room that was bathed in the gray-blue light of the morning, filtering in from the crystal ceiling above. Asha and Zahn listened for activity, but there was none. Good, Zahn whispered, everyone must still be asleep. Go ahead and make up a little bed on the couch and I'll start soaking the kala grain in the kitchen. When they wake up, everyone will assume you just slept in the front room, okay? All right, I'm still a little sleepy anyway. Cool, he smiled. Well, if you want to sleep a bit longer, that's okay too. I don't know, I might read a little. All right, I'll be in the kitchen. They both removed their shoes and placed them by the others, and Zahn disappeared past the arching doorway which led into the dining area. Asha's gaze returned to the front room, furnished with two large couches and a fireplace at the far end. As quietly as she could, she spread out a turtle-patterned blanket over the couch and lay down. She was about to look for Zahn's reading pad, but to her surprise, a wave of sleepiness came over her. She decided to rest her eyes for a moment, just a moment. When she opened her eyes again, she could hear a faint conversation in the kitchen. Asha stretched out onto the sofa like a large feline, curling her fingers and toes as she inhaled. Slowly, she sat up and noticed a faint blue hue on her olive skin. Above her, bluish light poured in through the crystal ceiling, colored by the canopy of blue leaves above the house. Her gaze drifted down to the couch just across from her. Covered in silvery rock turtle patterns woven into the fabric, she laughed to herself. The Avanians were so obvious in what they loved. She liked that about them, the honesty. Asha stood up, folded up the blanket, and took a deep breath. At last, she felt ready to answer Zahn's question.